Hello, and welcome to the Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Troy Sinek, joined, as always, by the Libertarian himself, Professor Richard Epstein, Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution, as well as Professor of Law at NYU and Senior Lecturer at the University of Chicago. Today, the Russia investigation continues. And Richard, we recur this week, as we do from time to time, to Special Counsel Mueller's investigation of all things Russia. And as we're recording this, the latest development, one of the latest developments anyway in this saga, has been Rudy Giuliani, the former New York City mayor and one-time presidential candidate, coming aboard the Trump team as the president's lawyer. And Giuliani made news almost immediately upon taking that position when he seemed to admit on a television appearance that Donald Trump had knowingly reimbursed his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, for the hush money that was paid to the adult film star, Stormy Daniels. And there have been two schools of thought around this. One that Giuliani sort of gave away the game and exposed Trump as a liar who's been engaged in a cover-up this whole time. And another that this is actually sort of exculpatory for Trump insofar as it moots whatever campaign finance problems he might have otherwise have had here. What significance, if any, do you take from this revelation?
Well, I think both of the points above are true. I always thought that the campaign contribution stuff was a bit of a stretch, given the fact that you'd have to prove that the payment was largely for one and only one purpose. There's a shot at that, but I don't think that that was the real problem. I think the real problem was always political exposure. And then when you have somebody like Giuliani getting up there, I mean, the most extraordinary feature is not what Trump did. It's at the total level of public incompetence that this man displayed in all of these appearances is something which is beyond comprehension. You read the transcript or you listen to anything he says and you sit there in wonderment. I mean, the first rule that a lawyer should always follow is he first investigates a case and then he talks about it publicly. Mr. Giuliani seems to think that the appropriate way to do it is in reverse. You first talk about a case that you don't understand, give a bunch of hypotheticals on a lot of key facts like the time and whether or not these payments to Ms. Daniels were authorized. And then you say, I'm going to go back and check this, but I think my client is probably guilty. I don't know whether it's with A or with B, but nonetheless. So what he's done, in effect, is made this the cause celebre. It's certainly going to have some political damage to the president. It's probably the case that the president couldn't get anybody else with sufficient public visibility to take this job on. But as far as I'm concerned, he's gone through many lawyers already, and there's another one who ought to be on the cutting block. I don't think that Mr. Giuliani is in his element. He may have been a great mayor, he may be a fine consultant, but as an ordinary defense lawyer, his performance is below the most minimal standard that you would expect from the most incompetent lawyer imaginable. It's just a horrific story. I mean, it's just hard to say anything kind about it. As to the president, I mean, you know, large numbers of presidents have committed adultery. I don't think that's news. I mean, if he had, to some extent, that would have kind of ruined his reputation, at least among certain kinds of circles who said he talks a big game, but he doesn't play it. But I mean, what happens is the cover-up and the indecision is a much more important story than anything having to do with the adultery, particularly since it was an adultery which happened years before he became a presidential candidate. So at least this far, it's not part of the Russian investigation. But, you know, as we said from the time that Donald Trump became president, you want to keep this guy in office. He'll have a great day in foreign affairs and he'll blow it with something stupid having to do with his personal life. There's no way you're going to reform the man. He's simply beyond redemption. What you have to hope is that the team will soldier on with important public affairs as he continues to make a laughing stock of himself, both as president on the one hand and through his advisors on the other.
Giuliani has also raised the specter that Trump might answer questions from Mueller, but that in doing so, he might also have occasion to plead the fifth. Giuliani's argument here being that Mueller doesn't have any underlying charges that would stick to the president, but this is a way to get the president involved in this process, but keep him from falling into a perjury trap. What do you make of that potential strategy?
Well, I don't think it's a very good strategy. I don't like the idea of pleading the Fifth Amendment in one of these things because it suggests that you have something to hide. And so all the onus and burden is going to be upon you. I think the much more important question is whether or not you can plead presidential privilege in order to keep yourself out from this particular hearing. Now, it turns out that the legal authorities are at this point against him, but but I think they're also distinguishable. And let me start to say what went on. The first of these cases was, you know, the most important one is the Clinton case from about 20 odd years ago, in which you had the Paul Jones fiasco. And somebody says, oh, we'll just have the deposition. We'll postpone the trial until he's out of office. At the time, I said that this was a terrible mistake on the part of the Supreme Court. It showed no understanding whatsoever how this process works. You put somebody into a deposition that's part of the public record. You start to say something in a deposition which is false or arguably false, and you end up finding yourself in front of an impeachment hearing because you now lie in the course of a deposition. The appropriate responses in these cases is exactly the opposite. The only person who can touch the president in any legal way would be the Congress if it decides to bring impeachment, and they don't have deposition powers. Anybody else, what you say is as follows. If you want to go after the president, what you do is you file your complaint now. The deposition is stayed. All document discovery is stayed, and two things other happen. One is that the president could be required to put into escrow documents that will not be destroyed, although the other prosecution can't read them. And then at the same time, what you say is the president cannot plead the statute of limitations, which is going to be told, i.e. waive for the duration of the presidential campaign. So what you do is you have a kind of a legal standstill, and this whole thing comes afterwards. Well, people will say, well, you will not be able to get the president then. I think the answer then is as follows. There are many other ways to get the president, and you have all sorts of other access without direct testimony. And in this particular case, it seems to me that if you can't win on those situations, you should not, notwithstanding the horrific judgment the Supreme Court showed in the Clinton case, do that. That's the first point. The second point is more complicated, and I'm not quite sure how it will play out. I think that the way in which this prosecution, Mr. Mueller has proceeded from start to finish, the way Mr. Rosenstein has proceeded, the way Mr. Comey has proceeded, is nothing short of horrific. They have basically used this system and have completely destroyed any public trust that anybody has in the FBI. So if you ask yourself, why is it that Mr. Mueller thinks that it's appropriate to take a deposition of the president, you would want at the very least to say that he's got something that he wants to ask about apart from a general fishing expedition. Well, what is that? As best I can tell, it's nothing. There is, as it seems clear from the recent revelations, the settlement to criminal charges of guilty by Michael Flynn, the Wall Street Journal article and a rather scathing column by Andy McCarthy in the National Review show that the supposed criminal investigations or charges in those cases were completely groundless. And I fear that there's a serious abuse of process by Mr. Mueller because, as I see it from the available evidence, the only reason why Flynn took that charge of guilty is because he knew that he would be bankrupted if he had to defend himself. And there was also a story that he wanted to make sure that his son was not going to be subject to prosecution. If those, in fact, were the kinds of threats that were made, this is a serious abuse of office. You should never, as a prosecutor, try to get somebody to make a guilty plea if you know that they're innocent in order to turn them into a state witness. So I think, in effect, that's a serious breach of duty by Mueller and by anybody else involved in this thing if, in fact, they did it in the way in which it appears from the evidence that happened. Well, then there's also the question about how do they get to the link in the beginning, and that goes back to the Steele dossier, which Mr. Comey submitted for reasons to get additional discovery against, I guess it was Sean Gates, but who remembers, in these cases, when the document was palpably false on its face and was known to be. Well, if you want to conduct an investigation and the only grounds that you have are an abuse of authority in one case and sham documents on the other, I think the appropriate response is to say that you don't get any discovery against anybody if that's the only kinds of things that you can do in order to lay the underlying case for doing this particular offense. And so, again, I really think that we've gotten to the point now where the political immunity of Mr. Mueller has translated into a kind of liberty of action that he's taken with respect to what's going on, which I find absolutely stupefying. I mean, you know, I'm almost beside myself to think that this is the way somebody who is a former head of the FBI believes that he should conduct some kind of an investigation. I mean, I don't mind him being tight-lipped, but this is the reaction that I have. If you've seen the report that the Republicans issued, and that kind of clears the president of involvement, at least it puts a burden on you to explain to someone somehow why it is that you're continuing an investigation. That means you have to be able to identify something that's going on. But what the what the Mueller team is doing is they're playing completely tight-lipped with respect to everything. So we have no idea what's happening. And, you know, if it was a question of amassing information, this hearing probably began 10 or 11 months ago. And if you haven't come up with anything in that period of time, then it seems to me that the presumption gets ever stronger that you're not waiting to build the mastermind case. What it suggests is you have absolutely nothing, and what you're trying to do is to play out the kind of revenge game that happened. And to the extent that you're relying on Comey, who of course was sacked by the president, to the extent that Mueller and Rosenstein are aligned with him and close friends, there are huge numbers of conflicts of interest in there. So I think the problem about pleading the Fifth Amendment, in a word, is it makes it look as though you have something to hide. What you have to do is to go up on offense and to say, you guys have a lot to explain on the other side before you could get a deposition. And if that happens, I think what you do is you require Mueller at the very least to give some indication in advance of what he wishes to find and what it is he has. And then, even then, I would still say no. And I'd be prepared to relitigate the Clinton case. I would hope that the Supreme Court has learned its lesson that once you have a sitting president, any form of litigation against him, civil or criminal, while in office is a desperate mistake.
So amongst a lot of the people who share some of the criticisms you just leveled are ones that are similar to them, and this is people both within the administration and some of the Republican allies in Congress, there has been a lot of pressure coming down both on Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, and Rod Rosenstein, the deputy who's really in charge of all this because Sessions has recused himself, to crack down on this investigation, or even some suggestions that there should be another independent counsel to add as a watchdog on this one. What strikes you as a proper remedy, Richard? If the Mueller investigation is out of control, is there a policy lever here that at least mitigates this?
Well, I have not thought of any because, I mean, I do believe that the president has the power to fire him, but I think the cost of that, given what's going on, is extraordinarily high. And so my advice to him has always been two words: shut up, don't tweet, don't talk, don't do anything, and don't answer a deposition. You fight that one through the courts and explain why it is that you think it's wrong. It would be, I think, almost crazy to try and suggest that what you do is get somebody to investigate the investigator, i.e., as Sessions, who's recused himself, to appoint somebody to invest Mr. Mueller. I just can't conceive of how that would happen. And of course, Mr. Rosenstein is not going to do it, and there's nobody else with sufficient authority or stature inside the department who could do it either. So I think what happens is that this is an open wound and will continue to bleed. I do think that the political pressure should be put on Mr. Mueller. And I think, say, you know, it's perfectly appropriate to haul him before a committee in the House or Senate and ask him to explain himself, because I frankly don't think that he can. I mean, all that's going on here is a complete stonewall. And when there was the revelation of the documents that were used in these cases, there was first a version that was sent over to the Republicans, and they protested about the redactions. They were all said to be done in the name of national security. And then they finally caved, and the only national security interest involved in them was a cover-up in order to make sure that people who were in high places in the FBI didn't look very bad in the way in which they're going. And that, of course, is yet another kind of abuse that you have here. The difficulty that you always have is when you give somebody secrecy to conduct an investigation, you run two risks. One is you blow this thing and make it go open, they cannot do a decent job. And so if you trust them and their integrity, then in effect, it's a necessary price that you pay for making sure these things are impartial. But at this particular point, there's enough stuff that's going on about here, which has been grudgingly released, none of which has the slightest redeeming quality for anything that Mueller and his team have said. And under these particular circumstances, it seems to me you have to have some fresh air and you ought to make them testify. I think it's also perfectly appropriate under the circumstances to haul Mr. Comey back before one of these committees and have him explain. I mean, again, as far as I can tell, his conduct seems to me to be presumptively criminal in this case. Just take the simplest thing. He has all of these notes. They're government property. Generally, you would want somebody at the very least to get the advice of counsel, both in the FBI and your own, to say that you could give them to a friend who could then turn them back in. And he didn't do any of it. And the moment these things, of course, were sent back through his law professor, a guy named Richmond, I guess it was, at Columbia, that's what triggers the investigation. This would not have happened in that particular fashion if Comey had been known to be the author of those documents, because at that point, the conflict of interest would have become perfectly clear. Well, that's very serious misconduct as far as I'm concerned by James Comey. I'm just so staggered. I've known this man in some sense since he's been at the law school, the University of Chicago, and I just think it's all out of proportion in this case, and it's everything else he's done from the 2015 has been wrong, harmful to both parties. It's just kind of crazy. So, you know, is there a fair case for an indictment against him? I think one of the questions you want to put to Mr. Mueller is, why haven't you investigated him? And if so, what would it look like? I mean, it just, to me, I'm staggered about the way in which this thing has gone. Normally, I don't like to resort to hyperbole. I tend to think that you have to give prosecutors the benefit of the doubt. I don't regard myself as being particularly pro one side or the other. But once it turns out that you have a chief investigator who is immune from dismissal for political reasons, then it seems to me to be absolutely imperative that he put me on the griddle and be forced to answer questions. And then if he doesn't want to testify before the committee, I don't think he has any privilege to get not to testify. He may have a privilege to refuse to answer certain questions, but not all questions. At that point, I think then, you know, there's a possibility of holding him in contempt of Congress. I certainly don't think that the status quo should go on. I am not trying to defend Donald Trump in the abstract sense of saying that he's a man whose decorum and fitness for office is something that I praise. Lord knows he's made so many mistakes in that particular regard that if he decided to resign, I think it would be a source of national rejoicing in some sense, even though I agree with many, perhaps even most of the policies he puts into place. But the issue should not be his conduct at this point. The key point that Giuliani has to understand, you plead the fifth, you're sounding like you're guilty. If you go after him in the way that I'm talking about, what you do is you make the center of attention. Any serious cause for misconduct in that office. Nothing has been proved yet, although there's a lot of evidence there which points in one direction. But it would, to my mind, be an enormous public relief to get characters who are involved in this thing back and to have them testify before some kind of congressional committee. And at that particular point, you don't have to worry about Mr. Sessions and his limited capacity. What you can do is let the Republicans in charge take over on this thing. I'm certainly happy to have the Democrats write and say anything that they did, because frankly, at this particular point, I don't think that they have much to say, except that Christopher Steele is a nice guy and it was okay to do when somebody like Scooter Libby. I don't think that those are appropriate. I think that the whole situation with Comey, Rosenstein, and Mueller does require some serious public investigation. This is not a satisfactory way for a country to conduct its major affairs on an issue of such importance.
All right. Thank you, Richard. And thank you to our listeners. Remember, you can follow Richard on Twitter. That's at Richard A. Epstein. You can read his weekly column, The Libertarian, by visiting Defining Ideas at hoover.org. And you can help us out by rating the show on iTunes. For Richard Epstein, I'm Troy Sinek. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been a production of the Hoover Institution. For more information about our work, please visit hoover.org.